Welcome. Gary Van Landingham joins us today. He's the director of the Pew MacArthur Results First Initiative. It's a joint project of the Pew Charitable Trusts and the MacArthur Foundation, launched in 2011 to work with states to strengthen their abilities to use cost-benefit analysis to help them invest in policies and programs that work and that are cost-effective. To put that in plain English, if, for example, a governor or a state legislature is looking for the best way to address a particular policy challenge, cost-benefit analysis can give lawmakers a way to compare those policy options and see which one is likely to be most cost-effective. The Results First team has a new report out called States' Use of Cost-Benefit Analysis. It's a first-of-its-kind study to measure states' use of this analytical tool. To learn more about the report's findings, I'm glad to have Gary Van Landingham with us. Gary, welcome.
Well, happy to be here.
Some of our listeners may be very familiar with cost-benefit analysis, while others are not. So let's get everybody up to speed with at least the basics. Cost-benefit analysis is an analytical approach that evaluates the costs of public programs relative to the benefits that they achieve. Tell us more about how you explain the concept.
What cost-benefit analysis asks is really the question, is it worth it to invest money in a program? Will it achieve benefits for citizens that exceed the cost of the resources that are going into the program? Basically ask, what bang for the buck would we get if we put money into this program? So it's an approach that's used widely in the private sector. I mean, this is the approach that the businesses use when they decide, is it worth it to invest in a new factory or to open up a new line of production? Because they want to know, if we put money into that endeavor, would we be able to get the benefits out of that to be able to get our money back? Government now is able to use the same discipline in a growing number of areas to ask the same questions. Is this program likely to achieve benefits for citizens that is worth the investment of taxpayer dollars? Or is there a different approach out there that could give us more bang for the buck, that would achieve better outcomes for us with the same amount of resources, or sometimes maybe even with less resources?
The first question that your report examines is, to what extent are states today conducting cost-benefit analyses? What did you find?
Well, I'm pleased to say that states are increasingly doing this, and we were pleasantly surprised by the amount of activity that we found. We found that every state has done cost-benefit analysis, or at least did in that four-year period that we looked at. The number of studies we found was going up every year, meaning that states are increasingly turning to this approach to ask and answer some of their toughest questions. I think that reflects a couple of things. One, it reflects the fact that states were really squeezed during the last recession. Overall, nationwide, states had to cut about $500 billion out of their budgets over that period. And policymakers were looking for evidence that the things that they were funding were actually delivering results for taxpayers. So policymakers asked for a large number of these studies. And both the number of the studies that they did each year increased, and also the statutory mandates that we found increased each year. And in fact, almost all states are now mandating that these studies be done, at least on an occasional basis, but in many cases on a regular basis, to really just give assurance that the things that the state is doing really make sense from a business perspective.
A couple of quick facts I noted in the report. The number of states conducting cost-benefit analyses increased by almost 50% during the four-year period that you examined, from 25 states to 37 states, and the number of cost-benefit analyses produced by states increased by more than 75% to more than 100 studies. So whether you think that's a lot or not enough, it's definitely a growing number.
It was a big increase and a very steady increase over time.
And what are the main areas, Gary, where states are using cost-benefit analysis? What are the policy areas?
Well, states are using cost-benefit in a large number of areas. The top five that we found were economic development. A lot of those studies were asking the question, are tax incentives really delivering the results that we want to see? If we're giving businesses a tax cut to come into our states to create jobs, is that really happening? Are we getting the returns from that? A lot of studies were done in health and social services. Is there a better way of achieving a goal? How effective are smoking cessation programs? A lot of studies in environment and natural resources, a lot of studies in transportation as well. Would a decision to fund, for example, a new rail project for inner city rail deliver benefits for us that would exceed the cost? And also criminal justice. A lot of work is being done to determine what criminal justice programs really have the best impact on reducing crime as well as doing that in a cost-effective way.
So the second major question of the study is, do states use the results of these cost-benefit analyses when making policy and budget decisions? What did you find?
What we found is that policymakers are using these studies in a lot of ways. In fact, about half of the studies we found, we were able to trace substantive impacts because of the use of that study. Policymakers cited these studies for doing things like shutting down programs that the studies found were ineffective, or for increasing funding at programs that were shown to produce good returns for citizens. And there were also some indirect impacts we found where the study really changed the conversation. And maybe it didn't lead to action in 1 year, but really sort of changed the way people are thinking about an issue. And those studies are very likely to have impact in future years. As you know, a lot of studies are done and sit on the shelves. These ones tended not to just sit on a shelf.
I always like to hear that. Gary, tell us about the third focus of the study, which is what are the challenges that states are facing in conducting and using these studies?
Well, we found four major constraints that are limiting states' abilities to use and to do cost-benefit analysis. The first is resource limitations. Cost-benefit analysis are not easy to do. They're not something that you can do in an afternoon. They require good data, which states may or may not have. They require staff who know how to do this, folks with an economic perspective. And particularly in recent years, states have cut a lot of the research capacity. They did that because they wanted to preserve the dollars going for direct services. What that meant, though, is that their capacity to use this approach to answer those tough questions was being reduced at the same time that those questions were being fairly salient in state policy discussions. So resource limitations is an issue that states are facing. Timing challenges is an issue. These studies take some time to do. As you know, policymakers make decisions in real time. So a study that comes out the week after a legislature has made a policy decision isn't going to have much impact. So it's going to be really important for people who are doing these studies to work closely with policymakers to make sure that they're not only answering the right questions for policymakers, but are delivering the results in a timely fashion and in a way that policymakers can use. In a legislative process where policymakers are voting on 1,000 bills in 90 days or in 60 days, because state legislative sessions are pretty short, giving them a 500-page report is not going to be really user-friendly. So it's important for researchers to pay attention to the timing of the policy process and to deliver the results in a way that really makes sense. Another constraint we found is that there can be policymaker inattention and distrust. Policymakers are really surrounded by a lot of information. If you walk the halls in Congress or in state capitals, you know that there are literally thousands of lobbyists, walking around trying to give information. So a report has to be delivered in a way that sort of breaks through all of that flutter, that really, so policymakers know that this information's out there. And they also have to deal with some distrust that the policymakers have. As you know, data doesn't always trump ideology. So it's important that people recognize the questions that policymakers are likely to ask. They have to be very transparent on things like the methodology, make it clear what the study did and didn't do, make it clear what these results mean, and be able to defend that in very clear language. I think one of the challenges of cost-benefit right now is that everyone's sort of picking up the lingo. So right now, if you talk to people who watch legislatures or Congress, virtually every program advocate's coming forward and saying, if you give me money, I will deliver five times the benefits of the dollars you're giving me, or 50 times, or 500 times, or 5 million times the benefits. And policymakers are beginning to question that because they recognize that people can gin up the numbers using different approaches and methodologies. So if you're assuming, a 3% discount rate for future values, you get one result. If you're assuming that there's no inflation over time and that things that happen in 15 years are worth as much to us as things that happen today, then you're going to have a different number. So I think that the field of cost-benefit is starting to mature, but some of these things need to be standardized more simply to maintain the credibility of the approach for policymakers. And lastly, I think one of the key things to keep in mind is that cost-benefit is about economic efficiency. And economic efficiency is important, but it's only one of the values that we care about as a society and only one of the values that policymakers care about. Raising the batting average of rigorous evidence is what we're about. There's going to be very valuable times and very reasonable times when policymakers will choose not to accept the results of a cost-benefit analysis. So we have to keep in mind that that even the best study is going to run into a variety of values out there, and we have to keep our expectations reasonable. Mm-hmm. You know, the goal of a study is to inform a policy choice, and we shouldn't say the study was a failure if policymakers decide to go a different way.
Your mention of the importance of building trust between those doing these cost-benefit analyses and policymakers makes me think of the Washington State Institute for Public Policy, or WISIP, and Steve Aus, who directs that, has been on the blog. And of course, WISIP developed that trust with the state legislature over a period of decades. In your report, WISIP is seen as the leader in the United States in terms of having a robust cost-benefit analysis capacity for lawmakers. But several other states are building a strong capacity as well.
Right. Well, Washington State's been doing this in a systematic way longer than any other state has. And Steve Schaap is world-renowned, I would say now, for the type and quality of the work that they do. And their track record is exemplary. But they will readily say that that happened over time. They had to gain the trust of policymakers. Policymakers had to understand what this analysis was, the types of questions it could answer, and the types of questions it couldn't answer. And I think that's where this field needs to go. People doing this need to understand that this is an incremental process. And I think that the strength of cost-benefit is states can really bring this process into the DNA of their own budget processes and to really use it to inform choices on an ongoing basis. And that, I think, is where the real strength and impact of this goes. And that's really what the rest of Results First is about, is that we're helping additional states replicate what Washington State is doing, develop the capacity to do the same type of portfolio cost-benefit analysis that Washington State's been doing, and to start to bring that into their budget process. And we're starting to see some good outcomes of that.
We'll end the interview here, but the conversation will continue. I'm going to ask Gary for a bit more of the nitty-gritty details about which types of actors are taking the lead within states, whether the governor's office or the legislature, to develop this kind of capacity. So I'll post his answer to the blog. I also encourage all of our listeners to check out the Pew MacArthur Results First website. It has both a report that we talked about today, as well as much more information about the Results First project itself. But for now, Gary Van Landingham from the Pew Charitable Trust. Gary, thank you for giving us an update about this very useful report.
Well, thank you. It's been a pleasure.